Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Brait PLC interim results. All participants are currently in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. Participants on the webcast may submit their questions in the text box at the bottom of the presentation. If you should need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please also note that this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Peter Hayward-Butt. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you very much to all of our stakeholders and investors who've taken the time to make the call this afternoon. In terms of the presentation, I'm here with Mark. I will cover an overview of the portfolio company performance and then, understanding of where we are in strategy implementation. Mark will then cover the NAV update and liquidity. I'll then get back and talk a bit more detail around the portfolio company performance. And then we'll end up talking about both the rationale for and the structure of the exchangeable bond capital raise, which was announced this morning, and the timetable for the implementation of that. So moving on to the first slide in terms of the executive summary. Very teasingly, three of the four portfolio companies that we're managing have performed very, very strongly during the first 6 months of our 2022 financial year. Premier Foods, as we'll touch on later, EBITDA is up 20% off in the last 6 months, off a very strong base this time last year. New Look, its strategy really is starting to take hold and take effect. Had nearly a £50 million swing in EBITDA to the positive during the last 6 months, again compared to last year. And Consol, despite some relatively decent operational headwinds, has made really good profit, strong profit growth in the last 6 months, despite some of those headwinds. We've talked about Virgin Active, and we'll go into quite a lot more detail during the presentation. As of the 30th of October, for the first time in many, many months, over 14 months, all of the clubs around the world were operational, so that's a very big positive. But as we've always mentioned, whilst performance is back on track, and we've certainly bumped off the bottom and on our way back, membership growth is coming off 74% of 2019 levels, and it's a long way back to get back to where we were in 2019, but we'll touch a bit on that later. From a balance sheet and liquidity perspective, as most of you will know, since Ethos took over the portfolio in March 2020, there's about 3.1 billion rand of proceeds have been realized to pay down the RCF, including some shareholder premier shareholder loans, and those have all been used to reduce the gearing at Brait. As we've articulated in the past, we have had to make investments into the Virgin business as part of the restructuring of the international business and provide a guarantee for the Virgin Active South Africa business, and that really has put a strain on the Brait net debt, which is currently 3.9 billion, excluding the VASA guarantee. So as part of the many, discussions that we've had with the board over the last 8 or 9 months, the board has decided to press the button on a capital raise, which was announced this morning. All of the proceeds of that after costs will be used to repay debt, and that will enable us as Brait to have the operational and financial headroom to implement the strategy of monetizing the portfolio of assets. The capital raise will be for 3 billion rand. It will be done through the issuance of exchangeable bonds. We'll talk a bit about that later. And it will be offered to all shareholders by way of a rights issue. The exchangeable bonds will be issued by a 100% owned subsidiary of Brait PLC, and it will be able to convert at the holder's election from a price of 4.37 rand. So any share price appreciation over 4.37 rand is for the benefit of the holders of the exchangeable bond. This will provide the requisite headroom to enable us, as I mentioned, to implement the strategy of monetizing the portfolio of assets over the next 3 years. And as part of that, we've reached agreement and will sign today with the lending banks to extend the BML facility. That's the bank facility that we have from 2023 March out to June 2024, which will give us the requisite financial headroom and liquidity headroom. Of the issuance, 2.7 billion rand of the 3 billion rand is already underwritten, and we're very appreciative of our shareholders who've come to the party. Titan, Ethos Capital, and Fund 7 have underwritten their their allocation. We've got a number of institutional shareholders who've underwritten their allocation. And then Ethos Private Equity, that's the partners of Ethos, in conjunction with Titan and RMB, have underwritten the 900 odd million of the facility, of the capital raise. And I think that shows a real commitment both from our lenders, and we're very appreciative of that, but also our shareholders and stakeholders and the advisor, obviously, in the confidence they've shown in the business going forward. Moving on to the next slide, just quickly, a quick update. We'll obviously go into more detail during the presentation. But as I mentioned, Premier has continued a very strong performance, EBITDA up 20% in the first 6 months compared to year on year, despite last year, as I mentioned, being a relatively high base. And this was predominantly driven by volume increases and price inflation. We'll touch a bit on that later. But obviously, the operational leverage in the business is starting to show through. The performance was driven by Millbake, you know, up 20% compared to the first half of the year. But importantly, all of the business contributed to the growth. The acquisition of Mr. Sweet, which was completed in June, has now been fully integrated. We'll touch on a slide a bit later, which shows that the majority of the synergies which we look to achieve over the next 2 years, 97% of those have been achieved in the first 4 months of ownership of the asset. The Inland Bakery, which is likely to be commissioned early in January next year and will start to show and drive operational efficiencies from April 2022, is nearly complete, and that's been a total of $450 million that the business has invested in that business over the last 18 to 24 months. From a Virgin Active perspective, as I mentioned, for the first time in a long time, all of the clubs are operational across all of our geographies, which is an important time for the business. The restructure that was concluded in the UK has shown good performance. The UK business has performed probably ahead of expectation since we reopened that business in April. Italy has reopened at the back end of May, and to be honest, has still had many COVID-related restrictions. So, for example, there you need to have a vaccination to get into the club. You need to operate with masks on, and the saunas and swimming pools remain closed. So those restrictions have held Italy back from a growth perspective, and we'll touch a bit on that later. But we've seen very strong sales in the UK, so up 19% compared to 2019 levels, and that's largely been driven by the provincial and the residential, London residential clubs, which were up 41% compared to 2019 and 15% respectively. And I think that shows, and there's enough anecdotal evidence out there, that gyms will continue to play a key role in people's lives around wellness and health. And we believe that gyms will play a bigger role going forward rather than a lesser role. And we're starting to see that already in the UK business. From a South African perspective, obviously the level three lockdowns that we were released from probably 6 or 8 weeks ago, you know, it did have an impact on the business, but very importantly, since we're back to level one restrictions, the sales, you know, we're back at sort of 2019 levels, which is a very positive sign for the business. But as we've said all the way along, COVID has had an impact on this business, continues to have an impact on this business. We do expect all of the business, key business units to be operationally cash flow positive by full year 2022. That's full year 22 to December for Virgin. UK probably during the first quarter and towards the back end of the fourth quarter, where Italy and South Africa is already cash flow positive. APAC likely to be somewhere towards the end of the year would also be cash flow positive. So we are making good progress, but as I've mentioned before, you know, it is a long way back for the subscription-based business. New Look, as you know, completed its CVA and its restructuring towards probably almost 12 months ago, and the implementation of their strategy really is taking hold. EBITDA for the first half of the year to September was £26 million compared to a loss last year of £26 million, so a £52-odd million pound swing. And that really has been driven by the e-commerce platform, with e-commerce sales up 46%, but also the bricks and mortar business. And again, we'll touch on a bit more on this later. You know, we've picked up market share in that business across the key categories. And very pleasingly, we appointed a new chairman, the ex-Sainsbury CEO, you know, who came into the seat over the last 6 weeks. If you talk about the Brait strategy, when we took over in March 2020, we outlined the strategy that Ethos had for the business and the board had for the business. And really, there were three key legs to the stool. The first one was around the core asset base, and that was to get the assets in the portfolio exit ready over a period of 3 to 5 years, to drive operational improvements in those assets, and ensure that we had management alignment around an exit of those assets. I think we can largely say that's been done. We've made very significant changes to some of the businesses. We've had to do that in the case of Virgin, but certainly the other businesses that have been probably less COVID impacted really are on a strong footing and showing very good profitability growth. The next leg of the stool was operational efficiencies, and that really talked to reducing the operating costs at a break level. As you know, and we said before, we've reduced the cost by 500 million rand a year at a break level, and we've restructured the board and recalibrated the expense of the business. So I think in terms of those two legs of the stool, we can say with some degree of confidence that we've made good progress. The one in green at the bottom left there is around the break balance sheet. As I mentioned, we've reduced gearing by 3.1 billion through asset disposals, non-core assets. But as we say in red on the right-hand side, you know, the underperformance at Virgin Active has resulted us putting in just over 1.1 billion rand of funding into that business as opposed to receiving shareholder funding out of that business. And I think where that leaves us today, despite the progress that we've made around the core disposal of non-core assets, is that we need to recapitalize the balance sheet of Brait to give us the runway and the financial flexibility to monetize the assets over the next 3 years. Just talking quickly about the strategy execution on page seven, I think we broadly talk about three phases since Ethos took over. The first was starting in March 2020, literally the day we took over was when COVID hit. I think we spent the first 8 to 9 months really understanding the impact of COVID on the portfolio companies, you know, what assets were impacted the most from a liquidity perspective, profitability, what costs we could extract in CapEx out of those businesses, and which of the non-core assets we could sell. I think as you can see on that, we finalized the operating costs, a new board within Brait. We completed a CVA for New Look, and we sold the Iceland business and DGB, and we recapped the international business of Virgin Active during that period of time. The second phase was around the COVID waves, and there it was about using a good crisis to ensure that we could extract, you know, the optimal position for the business around a couple of key portfolio assets. So if you took the Virgin Active restructuring, there the lenders, the VEL, the licensor, and the landlords all came to the party together with the shareholders to recapitalize that business. That was made possible by the fact that we didn't have the liquidity to put into the business, and we used that, obviously, in our negotiations. From the Vasa lenders' perspective, similarly, you know, we had to provide a commitment to that business, but we've got to a landing, and we will sign in the next week or so with those Vasa lenders an extension of that facility. The New Look creditors and banks, similarly, were negotiated with, and we came to a landing on that. And the final one, the BML lenders, we will sign the extension facility today to give us the requisite headroom and time to implement the strategy. So again, a lot was done, you know, between, I would say, November last year and where we are today. And I think we're now in a position to move into phase three, which is what I call post-COVID, although I don't think COVID's going away anytime soon. But it's shifting away from, you know, liquidity management slowly to looking at how we can expedite growth initiatives in our various portfolio companies. We've got great assets. We'll talk about them later. Some of them do require liquidity and growth capital to get fair value and good value for shareholders, and that's what we talk about in phase three. We're absolutely committed to returning capital to shareholders. We are targeting an IPO premier. Many of you will have seen we had a capital markets day 2 or 3 months ago on that asset. We're looking to do that potentially in 2022, market conditions depending, obviously, and we're still looking to monetize Console, hopefully in the relatively short term, probably over a 18 to 24-month period. And if you look at the bottom of the slide, just to give some context to how the assets perform from a valuation perspective, Iceland, we ended up selling at a 69% premium to where we took over the asset base as of March 2020. DGB, we sold at the NAV that we took over that asset. Console is up 76% since the March 2020 valuation, and Premier over the last 18 months is up nearly 42%, including the return of capital from shareholder loans. Virgin Active has been the thorn in the flesh, as we've mentioned. It's down 26% over that period of time, and New Look is broadly where we took it over. Remembering when we took it over, it was marked to market at the value of the convertible bonds, the bonds in the business, sorry. So talking just quickly about the balance sheet, the Brait balance sheet, The current, as of September, the current drawn facility is 3,970, so just under 4 billion rand drawn under that facility. The VASA commitment, that's the guarantee we provided to Virgin Active South Africa, or certainly our share of that, is about 760 million, which gives you effectively a total drawn and committed part of the facility of 4,730. And that compares with a facility limit of 5 billion, which will reduce by about 1.25 billion rand in June 22 to 3,750. So if you look at the covenant headroom, you know, whilst we have headroom across most of the covenant levels, they are relatively tight. And as a board, our advice to the board and the board is agreed is now is the time to relook at how do we recalibrate the Brait balance sheet. And if you look on the right-hand side in terms of the considerations, you know, why would we consider doing this at this point in time? The first is to create financial flexibility to optimize the realization of value. If we want to get the right valuations for these assets, we need to buy ourselves a window to enable ourselves to do that, and we can do that by recapitalizing the Brait balance sheet. We need a holistic solution to deal with the near-term maturities, which is June 22 and March 23 of the RCF, and again, the raising of capital facilitates that. And then the final one under liquidity is to provide liquidity and growth capital to our portfolio companies to enhance value. As I mentioned, we believe we've got a great portfolio of assets, particularly the two core assets. And where there's a requirement for growth capital, we want to be able to exploit that to enhance value for shareholders. We also want to reduce the debt service burden. As you can see, as I'm sure you know, the interest costs are prohibitive that we have in the business as it stands today. The BML facility and the exchangeable bond together have around 650 million of interest costs each year. And in an interest rate environment that's likely to be on the rise, we believe now is the optimal time to recalibrate the balance sheet. We obviously would have benefit of downward ratchets in the various BML facilities that we have to ensure that through that deleveraging, we end up benefiting our shareholders. That would result in a much improved liquidity position within Brait through a reduction of the operating costs. As I mentioned, that's 650 million. We believe there'll be about 800 million over 3 years of interest savings by implementing this capital raise now than there would have been if we kept the same structure that we have today. And I think the final one, we get a lot of questions from our investors talking about how are we going to solve the Brait's liquidity issues. And we've addressed those and said that the board was looking at options. We believe that this is the best option, and the board believes this is the best option to implement, and it will significantly reduce the risk perception around the Brait business. With that, I will hand over to Mark to give an update on the Brait NAV and the liquidity.
Thanks, Peter. Afternoon, everyone. Starting with page 10, Brait's reported NAV per share of 8.14 represents an increase of 3% for the six-month reporting period compared to the reported March NAV of 7.90. And it's a 6% increase for the last 12 months. Total assets at reporting date of 17.6 billion rand are weighted 48% Premier, 45% Virgin Active, 4% New Look, 2% other investments, and 1% cash and accounts receivable. Total liabilities increased by 8% during the current reporting period from 6.3 billion to 6.8 billion rand and comprised Brait's committed borrowing facility, which we refer to as the BML RCF, and that was drawn by 4 billion rand, and the 150 million convertible bonds, which are due December 2024 and are carried at 2.8 billion rand. The 500 million rand increase in the amount drawn under the BML RCF for the reporting period is largely due to the injection of Brait's pro rata 16 million pound share of post-implementation shareholder funding to Virgin Active UK pursuant to its restructuring plan. That amount was paid on the 12th of May, and we had disclosed that as a post-balance sheet event in Brait's FY21 results. And secondly, there's been an uptick on the accrual of interest on the facility at the reference interest rates of JIBAR plus 4%. The resulting NAV is 10.75 billion rand, an increase of 318 million rand for the interim period. With NAV per share, using Brait's 1.3 billion shares in issue at 8.14. Turning to slide 11, it sets out an overview of the NAV movements for the current 6 months. In keeping with the comparative periods, portfolio valuation metrics are quoted on a pre-IFRS 16 basis.
Premier's carrying value has increased by 10% from 7.6 billion rand to 8.4 billion. The maintainable EBITDA continues to be referenced to Premier's last 12 months EBITDA, which is 1.25 billion for the 12 months ended 30 September 2021, and that represents an 8% increase on the 1.15 billion rand that Premier achieved in its financial year ended 31 March 2021. Valuation multiple stays unchanged at 8 times, which is a 9% discount to the peer average spot multiple of 8.8 times, and that is based on an unchanged peer group of Tiger Brands, AVI and Rhodes Food Group.
Net third-party debt used in the valuation of 1.47 billion rand is essentially unchanged from that was considered in the FY21 valuation. Virgin Active's carrying value has remained at 8 billion rand. Maintainable EBITDA is unchanged at 105 million pounds, which reflects a post-coronavirus impact sustainable level. The unchanged two-year forward valuation multiple of 9 times represents a 21% discount to the peer group average of 11.4, noting that the peer group composition is unchanged from that used at March 21. The net third-party debt of £456 million includes a £34 million normalisation adjustment
for the estimated effect of working capital and costs deferred during the lockdown periods. New Look's carrying value has increased by 34% from 545 million rand to 732 million. The maintainable earnings of 55 million pounds used represents the annualisation of the 26 million pounds EBITDA that New Look achieved in its 6-month period to September 2021. The spot valuation multiple used of 5 times is a 60% discount to the peer group spot multiple of 12.6 times, and that peer group is also unchanged in terms of composition from that at March. Net debt of £71 million used in the valuation includes an aggregate £40 million normalisation adjustment, which considers the estimated deferred costs during lockdown periods as well as working capital seasonality. Other investments portfolio increased by 13% to £383 million, largely as a result of uplift on Brait's remaining private equity investment held through Brait 4, being Consol. Turning to slide 13,
this compares the reported NAV of R8.14 per share, breaking down its components, assets and liabilities relative to the closing share price as at 18th of November, which was R4.57, representing a 44% discount.
Turning to slide 14, we now set out Brait's liquidity and debt. In terms of liquidity, opening cash balance for the current reporting period at 1 April 2021 is 213 million rand. Brait received 20 million rand of proceeds from the investment portfolio, largely representing interest repaid by Premier on its shareholder funding. To note that in October 2021, which is post the interim reporting date, Brait has received a further 70 million rand of shareholder funding repayments from Premier. Total expenses paid during the period of 112 million rand is distorted relative to the income statement charge of 69 million due to the payments of amounts that were sitting in accounts payable at the March 21 reporting date. The purchase of investments of 367 million rand largely relates to the 16 million pro rata shareholder funding advanced to Virgin Active UK in May 2021 that I mentioned earlier. Financing activities reflects a net 307 million rand inflow from drawdowns on the BML RCF, which is offset by interest coupon paid on the 2024 convertible bonds. Closing cash balance at reporting date is 60 million rand. In terms of borrowings at reporting date, the BML RCF facility limit was 4.4 billion rand, less the drawn level of 4 billion results in available undrawn facility of 401 million, which together with cash of 60 million results in available liquidity of 461 million. Post balance sheet date, as Peter mentioned, we've reached final agreement with the BML RCF lending banks, RMB and Standard Bank, to amend and extend the existing BML RCF. The term date is to be extended from 28th of February 2023 to 30 June 2024, and the facility limit post the rights offer is set at 3 billion rand. The interest margin for this revised 3 billion rand facility continues at JIBAR plus 400 basis points. Following the repayment with the net proceeds from the 3 billion rand rights offer, Brait's expected drawn position on the BML RCF will be 1 billion rand, leaving undrawn facility of 2 billion rand. Brait has agreed to provide its pro rata 760 million rand of the total 900 million rand commitment by Virgin Active shareholders to the Virgin Active South Africa business as part of Virgin Active South Africa's restructuring and extension of its debt facilities. Post the reserving of the 760 million rand, Brait's available liquidity post the rights offer is expected to be 1.3 billion rand. At reporting date, Brait is in compliance with all debt covenants on the BML RCF
and 2024 convertible bonds. I'll hand back to Peter.
Thanks, Mark. So now just talking a bit about the portfolio companies, we'll start with Premier. I know Prem is well known to you, so I won't dwell on too much on the slide, which we talked to on the Investor Day a couple of months ago. But I think it's important to say is the continued strong performance of a very high 21 base has come across all of the business units, which is very pleasing to see. As we've mentioned to you before earlier in the presentation, we are looking to potentially list this business during the course of the next year, market conditions prevailing. We've had extremely positive feedback from investors and shareholders, you know, around the performance of this business. It continues to go from strength to strength. We think adding a couple of bolt-on acquisitions in the same shape as a Mr. Sweet is exactly where this business should be going, and we think it will have the requisite growth, size, and investment caliber to bring to the market during the course of next year. In terms of its performance for the 6 months, the revenue in the business up 12% to 6.6 billion rand for the 6 months of the year. EBITDA, as I mentioned before, was up 20% compared to last year, 17%. If you exclude the Mr. Sweet business, which we had in for about 2.5 months, it was consolidated from mid-June until September. Very pleasingly, the margin on the business has continued to go in the right direction. It's up to 10.3%, up from 9.7% this time last year. And probably most pleasingly is the return on invested capital. As we've always mentioned, getting a return on invested capital above your cost of equity is a key component part of a premium valuation. And compared to this time last year of 12.2%, we've seen the return on invested capital increase to 13.8%, despite the continued investment, particularly around the Pretoria Inland Bakery. The integration of the Mr. Sweet business is complete. I'll touch a bit on that later. There's a slide. And we're on track to deliver all of the synergies identified in the first 4 months that we thought might take us, you know, the better part of 2 years. So the business is performing very, very well. We're very pleased with the management of the business, but we're also very keen to see the growth, you know, that can come through in this business over the course of the next couple of years. And as I mentioned, we do think this is an asset that will be well-liked and well-received by the market. In terms of the divisional performance of the business, starting with the Millbank part of the business, as you can see from a revenue perspective, year on year, in terms of half one 22 versus half one 21, revenue was up 8%. Price and mix contributed 6% of that, probably in equal proportions to those two. Volume up 2% to give you an overall 8% increase to about 5.4 billion rand in terms of revenue for the 6 months in the Millbank part of the business. In terms of the EBITDA in that business, it increased to 760 million pre-head office costs, which is a growth of 20% compared to this time last year. Very pleasingly, the margin in the business increased to 14%, and we continue to see the operational efficiencies in that business come to pass. If you take baking, the price increases were able to be passed through to offset some of the wheat and oil price increases. Obviously, the oil prices impact the fuel and distribution costs in this business. There was civil unrest, as we know, in July. We got a claim of about 6.5 million rand in to Sasria. We think it will be paid before the end of the year. And Esotini, as I'm sure many of you know, was impacted to some extent by civil unrest in June. But despite that, the business, the baking business, has really continued to grow very, very strongly, credit to a very strong management team in that business. The milling side, again, outperformed what was a very high base from last year with lockdown-induced grocery buyings this time last year. There was an improvement in the gross margin. The market afforded better margins, particularly on wheat, not so much on maize, and that came through. As we know, the distribution costs were up, so to have a very strong performance in gross profit and EBITDA in this business, or this part of the business, is a great credit to the management team, despite the impact that load shedding and distribution costs had on that. So again, you know, from a business that contributes around about 81% to Premier's revenue, a very, very strong performance, both on an absolute and I think a relative basis. Moving to the groceries and the international part of the business, again, a decent performance, not quite as strong as the Millbank, but definitely a contributor. Revenue was up 28% to 1.3 billion rand in the groceries and international business. From an EBITDA perspective, up 4% to 109 year on year. And if you take the component parts of that, CIM, that's the Mozambican business, had a very strong volume-driven period, to be honest. Very good contributions around the animal feeds, the wheat flour, and the biscuits component part of the business, whilst there was some underperformance in the maize and pasta parts of CIM. But again, a very strong performance in relatively difficult conditions currently in Mozambique. The Lelets business, the South African business, as we mentioned before, took a decision, you know, the beginning part of this year, to be more competitive in terms of its pricing ranges. That has transpired into very good overall sales volumes in the South African business, but obviously at slightly lower margins compared to the prior year. The UK business, the volumes were off, but it was a very strong year last year, as people remember. So volumes were off, although margins were slightly up in this business over the course of this time last year. The confectionery and beverages business, volumes are up very, very significantly on the back of Mr. Sweet, obviously. We see the integration of that business really helping our existing confectionery business, both in terms of share of shelf and market share, and our engagement, obviously, with the retailers. The beverages business has continued to turn around. It's still a very small contributor, but we're positive that it's headed in the right direction. I won't dwell on that slide, which we've talked about already. In terms of the cash flow and the leverage in this business, again, a very strong performance from the business year on year. Just touching on some of the differences year on year from 21 to 22, really it's around the working capital movements. That negative 217 that you see there unwound literally the 2 days after the month year end, which was on a weekend. 116 million of that 217 was constituted in debtor payments, which were received 2 or 3 days later. So we reversed that out to give you an idea of what the free cash flow generation in this business has been over the last 6 months, about 427 million and a free cash flow conversion of around 62% before new investment in growth capital. The expansionary capex for the 6 months of 196 talks to really the completion of the inland bakery, therefore the operating cash flow after interest and tax of about 121 million. We did receive shareholder loan repayments of 11 million in the 6 months and 70 million a couple of weeks thereafter into Brait, so, which has been a positive. Talking about the Mr. Sweet integration, there were five key areas in terms of the synergies which we had highlighted at the board, and a really significant management effort to ensure that we got these synergies out of the business. We talked about trying to achieve this over the first 2 years of our ownership, but what we show in the table below is we've managed to achieve almost 97% of that in the first 4 months of ownership. And that's across IT, which is effectively a consolidation into our IT platforms, procurement, health, safety, and manufacturing. We're 87% complete on that. Marketing and route to market, we got a better result than we thought on that. Finance and remuneration benefits, we're 75% of our way to achieving our goals. And logistics really was a key saver for us in this business, and we see further opportunity there going forward, where we've achieved 154% of what we set ourselves to achieve over 2 years. So about 97%, call it 100% of the synergies have been achieved in this business, which is a very significant component given the current EBITDA in that business. So final slide on Premier, just sort of setting the scene as to where we are. This was the slide we used in the Capital Markets Day. And if we look on the right-hand side about where we've been and where we've come to, CAGR of 11% in terms of LTM growth of EBITDA. We're up to a margin, as I mentioned, return on invested capital of 13.8% with a margin of 10%. And we think this really sets this business up for success, not just in the short term, but hopefully over the long term on an absolute and relative basis. Moving to Virgin Active. As we all know, Virgin Active has been significantly impacted by COVID. And whilst it has been a difficult 9 months or so, I'm very, very pleased to say we are starting to see the fruits of the very difficult decisions that we made during the course of the year. You know, when we sat at the beginning of the year and we looked at our expectations for the business, none of us thought that the Italian business would be locked down until May, or for that matter, the UK business till April. Certainly no one contemplated the APAC business being closed all the way up until October, and that we would have level 3 lockdowns restrictions in South Africa. And all of these obviously have meant that from an expectation perspective, we probably traded slightly behind what we expected when we were talking about the opportunity for the business 9 months ago. But I really do believe that this business is in far better shape today to reap the rewards of the very, very tough decisions that management have had to take during the course of the 9 months. And I think that gives us confidence. Really, if you look at what's happened in the UK business and how quickly people have come back to our gyms there, not just to our gyms, but to gyms generally, and the fact that people are looking not just at, digital is part of the strategy, but I do think the bricks and mortar has got a very, very big place to play, and we're seeing that across our territories. In terms of the UK, we completed the restructuring during the last 6 months, which has provided that business with a very solid platform to grow from. The total cumulative benefit, the cash benefit of that restructuring was $134 million, which came across a number of stakeholders from the landlords to the licensor to us as shareholders as well. But we are starting to see the benefits of that, you know, in that business. A great performance in the UK business over the last 4 or 5 months since it reopened, with a 22% increase in its active members since May. We'll talk a bit about some of those stats over the page. As I mentioned, from Virgin Active South Africa's perspective, it really has shown resilience through the corona crisis, particularly in level three restrictions. Extremely difficult when you can only allow 50 people into your gym to have a, you know, positive sales effort. The business did a great job of probably retaining members during that period. And what we're starting to see in September and October with sales ahead of expectations and broadly back in line with 2019 levels. To give you some idea, I think we sold 25,000 memberships in October in the South African business. I think that's a phenomenal result, and I don't think there's many businesses in South Africa that could talk to that in 1 month. That said, there are still 5% of our members remain on freeze. We closed the freeze down during October so that the free freeze was no longer available. That did result in probably higher than we would have expected terminations during that month, but at least we now, you know, have a core membership, active membership base that is paying full fare. In terms of Italy, as I mentioned, the clubs reopened with very good membership engagement. We've started to see an improvement in the sales trend, as we always mentioned. Up to September, most people are away in Italy over the European summer. And in September and October, we've really seen really good traction again on sales. That said, you know, the intervening months of those summer months were tough months in terms of sales in the business. The restrictions remain there. We are concerned about the current COVID wave that's sweeping through Europe. Obviously, UK has taken a slightly different stance from opening up. We still see those restrictions in Italy impacting the business, and we have to continue to plan for that, unfortunately, in the foreseeable future. I think I've touched a bit on the fact that the global theme of focus on health and wellness hasn't gone away. In fact, on the contrary, we really have seen a combination of our digital offering and our physical offering remaining well-received and retaining good membership engagement. I won't dwell too much on the slide. I've talked a bit about it just to talk quickly, you know, in terms of which business, which parts of our global business are open. As you can see on this slide, you know, four of the five remain open, but with relatively strict conditions. Italy remains probably the most strict of those conditions alongside Singapore. That said, you know, trading, whilst it's been below expectations, sales in September and October have shown an improving trend, and the rental savings that we've managed to consensually agree with the landlords in Italy really have improved the profitability in that business. Australia really opened up during October. Membership engagement has been good since then. The usage of the gyms has been pretty good, except really around some of the inner city gyms in Sydney and Melbourne. But even on some of those, we're starting to see traction in the right direction. So I think Australia open with probably less restrictions, certainly, than we've seen in Italy and Singapore. Thailand and Singapore, admittedly small in the greater scheme of things, but have reopened again really in October. And again, it's amazing how quickly you see the membership base come back there. We'll look at a slide over the page, you know, on just how quickly some of the members have come back in that market. As I mentioned, the UK really has performed strongly, particularly around its London residential and its provincial clubs. But we actually are starting to see progress in some of the inner city gyms in terms of workouts. I was there with the team, both in Italy and the UK, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it's impressive. The gyms that they've got there are really, really impressive across those two jurisdictions. And I do think we have a differentiated platform to bring members back into our clubs. From a South Africa perspective, as I mentioned, there's been a steady improvement in member engagement. Sales, as I mentioned, October of 25,000, I think is a really good result. That said, there are still terminations in the business. We need to try and put the plug in whilst the tap's on so that we can fill the bath up in that business. Just giving you some stats on the business, from the various territories. As I mentioned, in Italy, there are 37 clubs in Italy. And as you can see, since August, you know, where they were down to 94,000 active members during the end of the summer holidays, that's increased 14% over the last couple of months. We're starting to see good traction, and it really talks to the sales traction that we saw in September, October, which is relatively pleasing. But I mentioned, and I say this all the time, it's a very long way back in this business to get back to the 2020 levels or 2019 levels of about 160,000 members in those active members in those clubs. Asia Pacific, as you can see, bounced back very quickly in October when it reopened back to 43,000 active members from, you know, literally only nine, which is really only the Singaporean clubs, as at September. Usage levels, for example, in Singapore are 155%, i.e. users are using it 1.5 times more than they used to, you know, pre-COVID, which is an interesting stat. From a UK perspective, again, very pleasingly, the active members have gone from up by 24% from 95 to 118, from October to May. Again, still a long way back. I caveat everything I say about the pleasing part of this, that it's still a long way back to 2019 levels, but absolutely we're starting to see the benefits of people coming back to our gyms. April to September sales, as I mentioned, up 19%, nearly 20% up on 2019 levels, and we're starting to see an early recovery in some of the corporate inner-city gyms in London. From a South African perspective, as I mentioned before, you know, pretty strong performance from sales since we got rid of the level 3 restrictions about a month and a half ago. Sales in September and October really have been broadly in line with 2019 levels, which was a good year, you will remember, for Virgin Active in South Africa. Terminations, particularly in September, were relatively high when we turned off the freeze, but we're pleased to see, you know, that's turned around again in October. So again, pleasing to see 25,000 sales during the month, but a long way to go, particularly around ensuring that we retain our members in our clubs. Just quickly to give you some idea of the numbers, it wasn't of any use us giving numbers over the last 9 months when most of our gyms, quite frankly, have been closed. So what we've tried to show, you know, on this page on the left-hand side is for the last 3 months, and we show the numbers for the last 3 months on the right, you know, which businesses have been open. Obviously, South Africa, you know, relatively onerous level 3 restrictions. We're now open since the beginning of August on level 1, and that really has, it's like a barometer for the business. The changes are, you know, very easily seen in the numbers, and we've seen that. The UK for those 3 months has been open during that time with very few restrictions, and whilst Italy has been open during that time, as I mentioned, some very strict and onerous restrictions across that. The APAC businesses have broadly been closed during this period. To give you some idea, you know, from the last 3 months perspective run rates, revenues was just over £75 million, and you can see the constituent parts of that from the various businesses, with club EBITDA over those 3 months of £6.6 million. All of our key territories over that 3 months were positive on a like-for-like basis. And to give you some idea in terms of run rate, you know, in October revenue was around £31 million. So, again, if you annualize that, times that by three, you'd be up at somewhere like £90 million of revenue. And of that, about £3 million came from the APAC, so which was closed up to September. So we, on a run rate basis, are headed in the right direction. Again, I caveat everything I say by this is a subscription membership business. It will take time to get back to 2019 levels, but certainly the changes that we and the management have made have set the businesses up, I think, on the right trajectory going forward. Moving to New Look. New Look has had a very pleasing performance over the last 6 months. As I see, there's revenue up 66%. Now, I don't dwell too much on that because it was closed the majority of the previous 6 months, but revenue up at 418 for the first half of the year. Very pleasingly, EBITDA of £26 million compared to a loss of £26 million during the 6 months of last year. And even more pleasing from that is the cash position as at September of £113 million, which had a free cash flow of £28 million in the first half of full year 22. They retain a number one market share in women's wear, and for the first time, we've had a larger share, the largest share of the women's wear market all the way back to September 2019. So I think credit to the management team who put in massive changes to that business to get it to where it is today. That said, I think we would recognize that October was a slightly softer month compared to what had been very strong growth up until then. I think driven by the end of the furlough scheme, which came to fruition in October. Obviously, there's inflationary pressure in the UK market, but I do think that's somewhat offset by, you know, a much less competitive space, you know, on the high street. So we remain very positive about the New Look business. Whilst there are headwinds, clearly in the UK retail space, this has shown really good resilience. Its e-commerce platform has grown very significantly alongside its bricks and mortar, and management continue to focus on options to grow this business. Just in terms of the numbers over the last 6 months, in terms of revenue, up 66%, but probably more important is the retail business recorded revenue of just under £300 million, or up 165 year-on-year. That was the business that was closed really last year. The e-commerce revenue is up at £110 million, so 6% up year-on-year. Now, remembering year-on-year, last year there was a very significant increase in our e-commerce business. So to be up 6% despite our stores being open is a fantastic result in this business. And our e-commerce partnerships also contributed up 23%. So a very, very strong performance across those three core parts of the business, which resulted in gross margins of around 45%, which I think is largely driven by the very strong cost management that the management team and New Look have implemented. So a very strong performance. We're obviously keen to see how the business performs during this last quarter, well, the third quarter of its year, given that obviously a December year December quarter is a very big quarter for the New Look business. Just moving on to the portfolio valuations quickly. You will have seen some of the numbers. I'm sure many of you have looked at the presentation and Mark has touched on it, so I won't dwell on them. But talking firstly to Premier, Premier's valuation as of September, maintainable EBITDA up to just under 1.25 billion rand, excluding Mr. Sweet. We've put that on an 8x multiple. That hasn't changed. The net debt, when you exclude the inland bakery capex and the Mr. Sweet, because it's not in the EBITDA, is 1.4, which gives you shareholder value of about 8.5 billion rand in this business. So our share of that is a carrying value for Brait of 8,360. I think worth touching on a couple of things on this slide. Firstly, on bottom left, if you look at how the NAV evolution since March last year on this business, it's grown from 6047 to 8360, so about a 40% growth, as I mentioned on that previous slide earlier in the presentation. And as you can see, compared to the peer group, which we show in the grey blob on a sort of weighted average, how they've grown from a market cap perspective, which has been broadly flat, a 40% increase in this business really is testimony to a great job that management has done. If you look at the top right, in terms of the multiples that we use, Mark mentioned, we haven't changed the peer group. We continue to value Premier at 8x, which is a discount to the 8.8 average that you see on this. And that's despite, if you look at the top of that chart, you know, 14% growth in EBITDA, CAGR, for Premier, which compares obviously to about 2% and negative 3% for AVI. So despite the stronger revenue, EBITDA growth, we still continue to value this business at a slight discount to the peer group, which you can see again on the bottom right. Moving to Virgin Active, Mark mentioned this. We haven't changed the maintainable EBITDA for the business. It's retained at 105 million. We haven't changed the multiple. The third-party debt, as Mark mentioned, the net debt is actually lower than that by 34 million, but we've added for deferred costs and cash burn that we think will be incurred over the next period of time. That number was 58 million in March, so effectively from 58 to 34 gives you some idea of the cash burn in the business during the course of the last 6 months. If you look at the shareholder value, the senior funding, that 25 going to 48 is the £20 million that Mark referred to, our share of that that we put in as part of the post the restructuring plan funding. The opposite actually applies to Virgin Active from a growth perspective. We've kept this asset flat over the last year, and it was down 16% in the September 2020 quarter, whereas actually the peer group has gone up by 28%, 38%, and 18% respectively in those three quarters. And that you can see on the right-hand side in terms of the multiples. We've kept the multiple flat, where clearly the multiples, the two-year forward multiples of our comparator set have gone up very significantly from 8.7 to 11.4 times over that period of time. We continue to believe that 9x is the right valuation metric for this business, despite the fact that the multiples are up for our peer set. And then finally, just quickly on New Look, Mark mentioned we're using a 55 million EBITDA, which is effective in annualization of the first 6 months of the year. We increased the multiple to 5x, I think reflecting the fact that the business liquidity issues are, you can never say behind it, but it's certainly in a far better shape than it was. And so we've moved that, and the fact that the business has gone through its strategy of turning the business into a more sustainable business, and we believe that merits an increase in the multiple. The net debt of 71 is an increase of £40 million, so we've increased the debt there by £40 million, as a working capital adjustment and for some deferred costs of around £8 million. So obviously the actual net debt, third-party net debt, is lower than that by £40 million. That gives you a valuation of £115 million for the business, which from a break perspective is, means that our stake, 18-odd% stake, is worth 732 million rand. So that talks a bit to the portfolio and the, you know, the portfolio companies and their valuations and the NAV. And that's probably worth getting on to what we announced this morning in terms of the capital raise for Brait. Importantly, just it's important to give a rationale before we jump into the detail. The rationale for the capital raise from the board's perspective is to provide runway to execute on the strategy. And by that we mean it's extremely difficult to monetize assets when you're on the back foot and any potential purchaser or the market can see you coming. It's extremely important from a board's perspective that we could have reconstitute the Brait balance sheet to give ourselves both the timing but also the negotiating ability to monetize the assets over the next 3 years. It absolutely is the board's intention to do so, and that remains our objective as the advisor. Also, it was important that we extended the short-term maturities. I mentioned the BML facilities with a June 22 and a February 23 maturity. We needed to resolve that, particularly from a balance sheet perspective. And then extremely importantly for us is to reduce the interest burden on this business. This deal will reduce the interest burden by 800 million rand versus the status quo over the next 3 years. And that is all to the benefit of all stakeholders, convertible bond stakeholders, exchangeable bond stakeholders, and also ordinary shareholders. From a structure perspective, we have structured the investment instrument as an exchangeable bond, effectively a convertible bond. It will be issued by Brait Investment Holdings, a Mauritian entity that used to be called Brait Malta. That instrument will be convertible at the holder's election. At any time and the holder wants to convert, it can convert into Brait shares at a strike price of R4.37. So at any valuation above R4.37, a shareholder can elect at its election any time to convert into shares. This provides full equity upside to exchangeable bondholders, plus a coupon of 5% to any holders of the exchangeable bond. It also provides downside protection, given that it has a debt claim in the business that ranks behind the BML lenders, but ahead of the existing convertible bond. And that ensures that there's very significant downside protection. We'll talk about that over the page, but full upside over the current, effectively the current share price. And then I think very importantly, it minimizes any dilution, doesn't get rid of any dilution, but minimizes dilution compared to doing a very dilutory rights issue for any shareholders who weren't able to follow. So talking over the page just quickly on, you know, what that means from a structure perspective, if we look on the left-hand side, the current balance sheet, the makeup of the assets, you've got Premier at 8.4 billion, you've got New Look at 0.7 billion, as we've mentioned, other, which is effectively Consol and a couple of other assets at 450 million, so 0.5 billion, and 8 billion rand being the current valuation of Virgin Active. So that gives you a total asset value of 17.6 billion rand. What's the constituent parts of that from debt to equity? You've currently got the BML facility. They're drawn to 4 billion rand. You've got the existing convertible bond, which is listed in London, at 3 billion rand. And then you've got shareholder contribution of 10.5 billion rand in terms of full NAV. What would that look like on a pro forma basis after the 3 billion rand exchangeable bond? The BML facility will be repaid down to 1 billion rand, as Mark mentioned, giving us very significant headroom over the 3 billion rand facility limit. The next in the queue will be the BIH exchangeable bond for 3 billion rand. The NAV cover on that exchangeable bond is 5.5 times, i.e. your exposure is covered 5.5 times by the current value of the assets above you. The next is the existing convertible bond, which very importantly, the NAV on that does not change. We are repaying the existing RCF, so existing convertible bond holders are no worse off. In fact, they are better off to the extent that we've saved 800 million rand of interest savings across those 3 years. And obviously, the Brait shareholders remain as a residual component of 10.5 billion. Just to give a very high-level view of the terms, this will be published on the 29th of November. I think it's next Monday. The issuer, as I mentioned, is Brait Investment Holdings, which is 100% Mauritian-based subsidiary of Brait PLC. It's unsecured exchangeable bonds, which are due on the 3rd of December 2024. They are exchangeable into Brait PLC shares at the holder's election based at the exchange price, which we will discuss below. All of the proceeds will be used to partially repay the RCF down to the 1 billion I mentioned. And as I mentioned, 3 billion rand is the principal amount that we're looking to raise, of which 2.7 billion rand is already committed or underwritten. In terms of the exchange terms, it converts into a fixed number of ordinary shares at the holder's election. Those are the exchange shares. That price is 4 rand 37, which was set as a 5% discount to the VWAP prior to the announcement this morning. And the exchange period is any day from 42 days, which is a regulatory requirement, after the issuance of the bond, so sometime during February, until 5 days before the settlement of those convertible bonds in 3 years' time. So up until then, you can hold on to the convertible bond, you can have the coupon, and at any point in time, you can elect as an exchangeable bondholder to convert into Brait shares. The coupon will be 5% and paid semi-annually. And from a redemption perspective, at the end of the 3 years, the bond will either be settled by Brait in cash, or Brait retains the option to settle in cash and shares and deliver those exchange shares to the exchangeable bondholders and top them up to their principal value of 3 billion with cash. And I think that's an extremely important point from a liquidity perspective for Brait. It really does give it full optionality, or much more optionality around the liquidity, to be able to settle that obligation in shares as well as cash. From a ranking and priority perspective, as we mentioned, it's structurally senior to the existing convertible bond, and any cash flows or special dividends would first need to be paid to the exchangeable bondholders, or offered to the exchangeable bondholders prior to being able to move up to Brait PLC. The instrument will be listed on the JSE, and as I mentioned, the maturity will be in 3 years' time. From a returns perspective, and again, you know, just to map this out, and we try to compare it to sort of an ordinary rights issue, in inverted commas, as to what the return profile would be. As you can see, there's two grey areas on the slide. The first one is the Brait asset carrying value. That's the 17.5 billion or 17.6 billion is the current total asset value of the assets that we have. If, for example, we did not grow those assets at all from today for the next 3 years and realize that value, there'd be a 12.4% return on this instrument for the holders of the exchangeable bond. Assuming that we can grow that total asset value at 5%, I'm just saying that's an illustrative number, over the next 3 years, that would get you to just over 20 billion rand of total asset value, which would suggest around about a 20% growth per annum return in the exchangeable instrument. And you can see, you know, to the right, depending on how we grow the total asset value. On the downside, clearly at any share price above the 4 rand 37, exchangeable bondholders will be in the money and therefore would convert naturally and get a return. But on the downside, everywhere from 4 rand 37 all the way down to a total asset value of 7.5 billion. And just to reconcile that number, Premier currently has a value of 8.4 billion. Okay, so all the way down to 7.5, which is less than the value today of the Premier business, you would receive a coupon and your principal back. Clearly, if the total asset value in 3 years' time is less than the 7.5 billion, there would be an erosion of capital in the business. So we think this gives exchangeable bondholders a very nice place to play in the capital structure, full equity upside over the current share price, downside protection down to 7.5 billion rand of value, so call it 10 billion rand less than where we are today. And we think that provides a good investment opportunity for our shareholders to invest. And then just finally on the slide, in terms of the benefits of the transaction, what the slide tries to show is the maturity profile of the debt that we have today. I mentioned June 2022, which is 1.25 billion rand, is the RCF facility. The March 23 maturity for the BML facilities is the 3.75. We would move 3 billion of that, the 1.25 and the 1750, effectively into the exchangeable bond, which matures in December 24. And the new facility limit of 3 billion rand only matures as at the end of June 24. So we've extended the runway to 2024. It addresses any of the RCF, you know, limit reductions and maturity profile. It creates 3 years of runway to optimize the asset sales and removes any risk of any credit event, you know, during that period of time. From a debt service cost perspective, the BML facility ratchets down from 500 basis points to 400 and further down as we repay that facility. And if you compare that to where it is today, that's about a 220 million rand annual saving across by putting this instrument, or $800 million, you know, over that 3-year period. It provides significant additional liquidity, as Mark mentioned, the $1.25 billion of additional liquidity, including the current commitment that we have to Vasa. The debt service obligations are fully funded all the way to 2024. And the ability to settle in cash and shares, as I mentioned on the previous page, provides significant optionality from a liquidity perspective for Brait. And in terms of the instrument, I've mentioned it gives full upside in terms of the exchange option at a discount to the current share price, and full downside protection all the way down to a very significant level in the business. Just touching quickly on the timetable for this, obviously the announcement today of the capital raise, there will be an EGM on the 22nd of December to approve a number of resolutions which were announced today. The finalization date is likely to be Thursday, and the prospectus and the rights offer circular will be sent and published and sent to shareholders on the 29th of November. The rights offer will open on the 6th of December and close on the 17th of December, and the issuance of the exchangeable bonds on the 22nd of December 2021. And therefore, in conclusion, just to finalize, I think I mentioned, I won't go into detail again, we're very pleased with the performance of Premier. It really has continued to perform well. It's continued to invest in its core business, and we're going to hopefully reap the benefits of that in that business once the Inland Bakery project comes to fruition starting in January next year. The integration of Mr. Sweet largely complete, and as I mentioned, the listing plans are well on track for a listing of this business during the course of next year. Virgin Active, as we've said, the continuing trend to come back to gyms with a combination of physical and digital offerings continues. We do think the restructuring of the UK business that we put in place has stood that business in good stead, and we're starting to see the recovery of that, albeit off a low base. And the Virgin South Africa business, certainly over the course of the last couple of months in level one lockdown, is starting to see a return to some growth in its membership base. That said, and I caveat this, you know, that getting back to 2019 levels will take time. It's a long journey back, but we definitely believe we're off the bottom, and there's significant value upside to getting it right. New Look, you know, very strong sales growth, profit performance, and cash conversion continues. Let's hope that this is a very strong quarter for the business, and the better competitive dynamics in the high street should work to its benefit. From a Brait perspective, the 3 billion rand capital raise will provide the liquidity runway that we need to exit the portfolio optimally. The medium-term monetization of core assets absolutely remains a core strategy. I get asked that by investors. The board has not changed its strategy. It absolutely wants to monetize and return value to shareholders, and that is the core strategy. And we continue to focus on New Look and Premier to grow those businesses, but we recognize stabilizing and growing the Virgin Active business is obviously going to be key to getting maximum shareholder upside. So thank you very much for taking the time. I'm very happy to open up to any questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on the conference call, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone phone or on the keypad on your screen. You will hear a confirmation tone that you have joined the queue. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star and then two to remove yourself from the list. Participants on the webcast may submit their questions in the text box below the presentation. So we have no questions on the conference call. Do we have any from the webcast?
Yeah, there are a couple. Firstly, from Citigroup, for Premier, please provide an update on the competitive landscape in the bread category, particularly pricing and capacity utilization. What trends do you anticipate in the second half of your financial year? Thanks, Horsey. Look, so the competitive dynamics, as you will have seen in the results, you know, we have seen some, you know, price increases that have been put through to the, through to the market, given where, you know, wheat prices were. They seem to have stuck. Certainly our market share is up slightly during the last 6 months. So I think the competitive dynamic is always there. We don't see it gone away. We opened up another line of our business down in Cape Town, and that is almost fully utilized already. So the informal market has continued to grow, as you know, and that's a key market for the business. So I'd suggest it's very difficult to talk about trends for the second half. We started the second half well. We had a good October. The dynamics remain, you know, in place. And we still seem to think that there's, from a capacity perspective, you ask about utilization, you know, we're running at, you know, relatively close to full utilization of most of our plants, so which is pleasing. I think the big thing for us will be the operational efficiencies we can get once we open up on the inland bakery. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, very difficult. I don't want to give a forecast clearly, but, you know, we don't see anything yet on the horizon that would suggest the competitive dynamic from our perspective, which has been relatively favorable, is going to change. Charles from Titanium Capital, if you monetize New Look and Consol, would it be viable to list Premier by unbundling Premier to Brait shareholders and then leave Brait essentially being a listed Virgin Active? This would potentially minimize the cost of unlocking value, and Premier and VA could then raise capital for expansion on a standalone basis. Charles, absolutely. A strategy we've always looked at and continue to look at is one of unbundling these assets to shareholders. That said, before we can do that, we would need to repay the existing convertible bond and obviously the exchangeable bond that would be in place. But let's say the shares were in the money and shareholders decided to convert the exchangeable bond, we would still need to settle the convertible bond before we could do what you outlined. We still think, and there's a talk a bit about on the next slide, is a holistic solution isn't one where we can do just through a Premier listing. You know, if we're going to go to a Premier listing and you're going to try and raise enough money to solve Brait's capital requirements, I think you'd be in a position of being a price taker, which we think is absolutely the wrong place to be. We think Premier is a great asset. We think it'll be loved by the market. We need to have the right sized offering to get international interest in there. But on the other hand, we don't want to be so large that we're trying to solve, solve for a Brait gap. Greg from GLB Trading, what was the logic behind opting for exchangeable bonds instead of a partial payment of a placement of Premier shares, for example? That was question one. He's got three questions. Greg, the honest answer is I think I've just alluded to. There was no scenario where just doing a placement of Premier shares was going to solve Brait's liquidity issues and balance sheet issues without being an absolute price taker. To do that, as we've shown, we think we are going to list Premier next year. Let's say we raise $3 billion through the exchangeable bond plus $3 billion, let's say, in the form of a placing of shares. And Premier, that solves our liquidity. We couldn't solve that by doing a $6 billion rand placing of Premier without being an absolute price taker in the market. We think Premier is a great business. We think it'll be an attractive asset. But we're not in the movie of trying to be a price taker on that. And that's why we elected for going this route. The other point is you can never be sure that the market will be open in June next year, for example, in Premier's case. We went to our key shareholders with this proposition. There's been very significant interest, and we're very grateful for the support of our key shareholders in this restructuring. And we just think we need to make sure that we put holistically Brait back on an even keel, with respect to its balance sheet. Point two. Can we get clarity on how we price the exchangeable bonds? I don't know exactly what you mean by that, but the fact of life, if I was looking at it, I would say I have a bond profile all the way down, as I mentioned, from 17.5 billion of total asset value to 7.5 billion rand. So you can make your own view of your downside risk on that, which I think is low, given that at 7.5, that's less than the current value of Premier. And you get full optionality over the current share price, right? So, you know, put into your Black & Scholes model at, you know, pricing it at market, we're at a 5% discount to market with some decent volatility, I think the option is extremely valuable. So I would suggest that there's a lot of value in the exchangeable bond, but I'm not going to try and guess what it is. Question three, how would the pricing of the bonds be affected by a possible listing of Premier? I don't think the pricing of the bonds would be affected, but the reality is that to the extent that we ever raise capital in Premier, and let's say we raise $3 billion to pick a number out of a hat, at any point in time, before that 3 billion rand could flow past the exchangeable bond holders, it would need to be offered first and foremost to the exchangeable bond holders. So it can't flow past them. It can only therefore be a positive, I would imagine, to the pricing of the bonds, if we finally do something on that. Nick, at Signal Asset Management, given the 8 rand NAV, Brait is effectively swapping 100 for 50 in the rights issue. Did the banks force your hand? Nick, look, the reality of life is, okay, well, let me finish your question. Surely asset sales, even at a discount, would have been a better option. The offshore markets are placing a premium on listed gyms, so one would have thought that the sale of the offshore gyms would have been an option. Nick, so let me answer that in a number of different ways. Let me start off by the Virgin question. There would be absolutely no chance of getting a premium valuation if we were to sell Virgin today. None. It's zero. I mean, we are absolutely on the back foot. We're building the business back up to 2019 levels. I'm not saying you need to get back to 2019 levels, but absolutely you need to show a trajectory to get there. If we had to go now and try, and we have spoken to people about monetizing that asset, we would not be doing our shareholders any justice. So I would have thought, when you talk about asset sales, if we talk about a discount, the only other one really then is Premier. Why would we want to sell an asset in Premier and be a price taker in an asset that is performing better than its peers, is an asset that we believe will be well-liked by the market, and certainly the feedback we've had from investors is so. Why would you not rather offer your shareholders in the form of a rights issue? It doesn't matter where, if your shareholders take up their rights, it doesn't matter about the NAV, right? I would far rather offer that opportunity to my shareholders in the form of a rights issue and have them follow their rights, in which case the NAV dilution is irrelevant, than sell my assets at a discount. The next question from Ryan O'Hagan at EPIC. Please, can you provide some color on the change of methodology for New Look? Yes, we can, Ryan. So when we did the valuation in March, you will remember that we had a forecast for a 12-month forecast for New Look. We didn't know whether it would be profitable. It was based on an Excel spreadsheet. And as we all know, you don't make loss in Excel. Looking at that number, that gave us a view that over the course of the next 12 months, we would have a maintainable EBITDA of $59 million, I think it is, from recollection. What have we changed? We are now in a position to be actually able to see what the actual numbers are in the business. We annualized the first 6 months trading. Clearly, quarter three is normally a better quarter than the first two, but what we've done is annualize it, and therefore all we've done is we've taken a spot multiple for that. And then if you look at the valuations, the multiples, a one-year forecast of 4x effectively corresponds to a spot of 5x. So there actually weren't any changes really in any material form. It's just the business has performed better, the cash flow in the business has been better, and therefore the business valuation has gone up. One more question from Ben. It's again a Signal Asset Management. Can you provide some guidance on the likely timing of the Premier listing? So I always have to be careful what I say because the advisors will probably shoot me, but you know, we have appointed advisors. We've been working on it for 3 or 4 months. The reality is the first window that we can have would be off the back of our March results, when I say our Premier March results, so 31st of March. And if you work to try and get those numbers audited and into a pack, we're talking about sometime during June, July is probably the first window. And clearly it will depend on two things. One, is the business still performing as well as it is today? And secondly, is the market open for a potential listing? If it is, we would like to see whether we can hit that window. But as I mentioned before, we absolutely don't want to be price takers, in that game. I think that's the only questions that we've got. But as I mentioned, I know I get it in the neck if we don't ask someone's question, but please feel free to reach out to us directly if there are any further questions. I know there's a lot to cover in today's presentation. We're extremely appreciative of, you know, of the support that we've received from the majority of our shareholders, and we really do genuinely look forward to growing this business and monetizing these assets and returning that value to you as our very patient, great shareholders. So thank you very much for taking the time. I'm very happy to open up, Chris, if there are any other questions on the line.
So we don't have any in the queue at the moment. Just a reminder to those on the call, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one.
Okay, Chris. So, well, look, again, thank you very much for everyone for taking the time. We really do appreciate it. I look forward to speaking to as many of you as we can over the next week or so. And as I mentioned, please feel free to reach out to any of us if we can help. Many thanks.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that then concludes this event, and you may now disconnect.